Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Welcome back to the Disruption Zone. I am Leland Conway, joined today by my friend, retired Navy SEAL, Aaron Reed, who is sitting on his farm on the porch of his house. You can hear the birds, and it's definitely spring in the bluegrass, hanging out with me today. Aaron, how are you, bud?
Doing great, Leland. Good
now,
to be here.
Now, you just got back from deployment, so are you officially retired, or are you still kind of call up, or how's all that work with the SEALs?
Well, I have left active duty.
Okay.
But I'm at a reserve unit now. I'm an East Coast team guy, so I'm a SEAL Team 18, and I'm a senior chief.
Okay.
Still in the game, but part-time now.
Right.
So, you know, I probably won't be getting any phone calls in the middle of the night, you know, ready to rock and roll at a moment's notice. But I am still in the game, and I get to play every now and then. Still get to jump out airplanes and scuba dive and do all the cool stuff you see on TV, but only on, you know, once a month or for the two-week AT that we do, or in the chance that they call me up and we go on a trip.
Yeah. So what is, like, okay, so right now you would mainly just be doing training if you got called up, but you might go on a trip.
Yeah, that's kind of one of our main missions is training host other nations that are very friendly with the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, like South Korea is a really good example.
How are of our allies, the ones that you've trained, which ones do you say like command the most respect? Like you're like, those guys are badasses. Like those guys can run with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, the South Koreans have been
I've heard they're freaking badasses. Like
they
don't mess around.
They like to key off of what we do, and they've really improved their game in the last 50 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, they lived under the constant threat of war, you know, and they've got this constant threat looming over them with North Korea. So they're a little more motivated, and, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, being in combat, how you can get used to being shot at. I know it sounds weird, but,
yeah,
you know, rounds flying over your head or, you know, a random RPG flying over your camp or, you know, a mortar round hitting somewhere in your vicinity. It sucks every time, but you kind of get a little numb to it. And I think that the Korean people have kind of gotten used to that overwhelming that most people would have. The constant threat of North Korea at any moment just losing their mind and launching into South Korea and just messing up their world, especially Seoul. I mean, you got Seoul, Korea right there on the border.
It's like what, with 20 miles from the DMZ or something?
It's roughly 20 miles. I mean, they're within artillery range of North Korea.
Jeez.
You know, so at any moment it could get real.
Yeah.
And they have been living through that their whole lives. Everyone that's there now has been, you know, their whole life there's been this threat.
Right.
But yet Seoul and the people of Seoul just live their lives, and, you know, they're not, I guess they just they've accepted that it could happen at any moment, and they live it up.
You
know? You would think that city is huge. I thought New York was big.
Right.
Seoul is legit.
So have you actually been to the Korean Peninsula?
Yes.
What is it? Yeah. What is it like geographically, topography? I'm always interested in countries that I haven't been to yet. Like, what is the topography there? What does it actually look like as compared to like places in the United States? Because Korea's not like, it's not jungle, is it? It's more like temperate. It's
not
like
at all.
Maybe almost like Kentucky or what?
It's like Kentucky and Colorado mixed, I think. There's lots of mountains. They're not super tall mountains.
Right.
But it's a very mountainous terrain.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day when during the Korean War, it was a really slow rolling getting, you know, trucks and jeeps and tanks through the Korean Peninsula. The Navy would be key in moving around there. You know, I've never seen so many tunnels in any country. You know, the South Koreans have figured out their tunneling game is on par. They
it's on point.
On, you know, it's on point for sure. You know, we drive from the north end to the south end constantly, you know, back and forth, and you're in tunnels half the way. You know, you always wonder, is the bomb going to hit while I'm in one of these tunnels? I'm going to come out the other side, a whole new world, because you're in tunnels so long.
Right, right.
You know, it's kind of cool. You've got, there's no police officers in South Korea. Well, there are, but you hardly ever see any because there's cameras everywhere.
Really?
You know, if you, it's like the, yeah, it's the Big Brother game is going on big time there. Everywhere you go, there's speed cameras. It's hard for Americans to drive there because you know how we're always...
We'll be getting tickets after tickets after tickets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, before you know it, you've got tickets racked up because they have speed cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and they have... When you go through these tunnels, they these alarms go off to wake you up because people get, you know, when you get tired when you're driving, sometimes you'll drift off, and people have accidents in these tunnels all the time. So
yeah.
You know, if you have an accident in a tunnel, it's worse than having it anywhere else because you just clogged up a major artery and you get a pile up. It's hard to get help in there. So they have these sirens that go off and scares the crap out of you every time you drive it through there. You know, because they're really loud.
Yeah.
And they definitely wake you up if you're feeling drowsy. So,
that's fascinating.
You know.
Tell me about, like, a lot of people are curious because Navy SEALs are, you know, we think of you guys as... well, you are badasses, American badasses. You guys are the guys that do, you know, the things that quietly in the night that keep us free. What is it like to become a SEAL? What's Buds Week like?
Well, Buds is a very long block of training. It's, you know, the basic underwater demolition.
Hell Week, rather. Yeah. So Buds is training, but Hell Week is the week. Yeah.
Hell Week. I mean, it's kind of a misconception. It is a major milestone to go through Hell Week, but
you
make it through Hell Week and you've got a long road to go still.
Right.
Hell Week is just a fast way to weed out those who probably wouldn't make it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a combat situation or a combat simulated scenario that stresses you out beyond any other training. You know, it more than anything you can ever do in a non-combat related situation, because you're just completely stressed out with no sleep.
Right.
And you're pushed the absolute limit. And it's Hell Week is typically the third week of first phase. So first, we got first phase, second phase, third phase. And prior to that, you've got an indoc. You know, they change the name of indoc every now and then. But indoc can be anywhere from a month to 3 months for some people, because it's kind of a holding unit where everyone that checks into that command goes into that indoc phase for the most part. And every other month, so every 2 months, I think we do 6 classes a year still at Buds. So every 2 months, a new class classes up.
Okay.
And normally it's all the guys that have been there the longest. Typically you'll have, you know, 150 to, you know, 200 guys. I'm not sure what their number is now that they try to go with, but it fluctuates depending on the needs of the Navy.
Yeah.
But you class up and you start first phase, and the first couple weeks are brutal. You know, that's where you see on TV the log PT,
right,
the boats on the head, you know, and they're constantly running. They're wet and sandy every day. And then Hell Week is like the third, or sometimes it's the fifth. They switch that up too every now and then. But nevertheless, it sucks just as bad. It's almost better to have it sooner because your body hasn't been beat down as much.
Right.
You know, but when you kick off Hell Week, you've already been, you know, from like 4 a.m. to, you know, 6 or 7 p.m., you've been getting, you know, pummeled pretty good. And one thing that I think the misconception that people have about Buds is it's not boot camp.
Right.
You know, this is a school for men, for adults, and you actually do get to go out at night if you have the energy.
Right, right.
You know, so it's a school. It's not boot camp. So you have some freedoms, and honestly, it's enough for guys to hang themselves. You know,
right,
if you're an adult and you're capable of living in San Diego, California, and Coronado, California, and you know, enjoying the the nightlife and everything else, and still balance that with the hardest military training in the world, then that's something to be said for that. So,
right.
You know, that right there is another, you know, another aspect of the training that a lot of people kind of overlook. So first phase, you know, it's 8 weeks, and week three is hell week. And if you're lucky enough to, or just be too dumb to quit like I was, you make it through hell week, and then you realize that, wow, there's a lot of training left to go.
Right. You know, so from beginning to end, how long did it take you to officially become a U.S. Navy SEAL?
Well, budge training 6 months, typically.
Right.
I got rolled twice.
Okay. What does that mean?
So, I injured my leg on a run in second phase and got bumped. I got bumped back. Well, I didn't lose any ground, really. I just got lucky enough it was on the first day of second phase. But I had to redo that first day again. And then I had an issue on a dive in second phase on my second class that bumped me back some more. That's a whole nother story.
Right, right.
It was just kind of some crazy stuff that went down in Buds. I mean, it's a whole nother world. I mean, it's ridiculous.
So, how many... It may be classified, I don't know, but roughly how many Navy SEALs do we have? I mean, there's a lot of different teams, and we've expanded our special forces capability, and there's other units as well that are not Navy SEALs. You know, there's other special forces units, but how many Navy SEALs do you think we have, maybe?
You know, just shooting from the hip, I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Without looking some numbers up, but, you know, we've got, you know, you've got SEAL team... Let's see, on the West Coast, you've got 1, 3, 5, and 7. All the odd numbers are on the West Coast, right? So
right.
Then on the East Coast, you've got 2, 4, and you could say 6, but that's at Damnick. You've got 2, 4, 8, and 10. So there's 4 SEAL teams on each coast. And then you've got SEAL Delivery Vehicle Team 1 in Hawaii. And then you've got Naval Special for Development Group in Damnick. Man, there is probably, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 team guys.
Wow.
At any given time.
That's a formidable force. That force alone could probably topple a lot of the world's armies. Just those 5,000 guys.
Well, definitely a force
yeah.
multiplier when you add, you know, a SEAL team to a conventional or a group of like Rangers or
right.
Marines, Marine Corps units, you know, as a added bonus.
Yeah.
You know,
One of the reasons I wanted to bring you on today was, you know, to talk about preparedness, because I think a lot of people, you know, one of the things we had in the wake of the situation with COVID has been people buying up all the toilet paper, right? People were caught unprepared, which is kind of a funny thing. And, you know, for a long time, you know, there's this whole world of, like, you know, conspiracy theorists, preppers, you know, the Mel Gibson's in the, what was that movie he was in that he was all about conspiracy theories. But the truth of the matter is we see how vulnerable we are from this. And it's probably a good idea to be a certain amount prepared for a calamity such as what the nation is still finishing up going through right now. I wanted to see what your thoughts were on how people could. Because SEALs prepare. It's what you do. I mean, your entire life is preparing for battle, preparing for the mission, preparing to go on your trips. You know, I would imagine there would be some good advice in there for how everyday Americans can be prepared for things like meat shortages and other types of shortages that have popped up periodically throughout all of this.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things to talk about as far as that goes. The first being, don't be so naive into thinking the government is going to take care of you.
Right.
You know, that's like so many people rely on that. And, you know, they hope that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny is going to come and take care of them and bail them out. And I was really honestly surprised to see these stimulus checks come out like they did, especially on with a conservative in the White House.
Right.
But I get the point. I see what had to be done there. Anyway, getting back on the preparedness, you know, I'm lucky enough to be living on a farm now. I know everyone doesn't live on a farm.
Right.
But, you know, if I wasn't on a farm and I had any kind of dirt to plant in, I'd probably be planting something. You know, I would definitely be looking into these little, there's lots of different hanging gardens, you know, this stuff that you can do in your backyard to get creative and have some food going, you know, and you don't have to go to Costco and load your van up, you know, in one day.
Right.
If you just have a pantry in a, you know, area set aside, and every time you go to the grocery store, just buy a little extra every time, you know, buy some extra spaghetti and some sauce or, you know, some ramen noodles or whatever, you know, just, it's no big deal. Just add, just buy a little extra of everything you get and then set it aside. And you'll, before you know, you'll have a pretty good backup, you know, pantry. You don't have to have, you know, survival food like, you know, these guys that are selling
the buckets,
you know, the buckets, you know, I have friends that do that and it's good to have some.
Yeah. I've got a little bit, I've got like 90 days of it in case the apocalypse happens, but I forget it, you know, I leave it and forget it.
So. Yes, that's right. And that's nothing wrong with that. That's a good plan. It's good to have that, but that's more for like a bug out.
Right. Exactly.
You know, if you're not leaving your home, why do you need to eat out of a Mylar package?
Exactly. Know? Yeah. Yeah. My thoughts are if something is like, you know, with the proverbial shit hits the fan. You know, I throw a bucket in my truck, get my dogs, my wife, my guns, and I'm out, you know.
That's travel food. There
exactly.
You know, exactly. Have a plan, and you, I've got a lot of that stuff here, too. I've got odd basements. You know, I got a pretty good stock of freeze-dried stuff, you know. I have to do gluten-free because my wife can't have gluten, so I think about dietary issues.
Yeah.
You know, my dad's a diabetic, so we try to have him... Luckily, he was allowed to go to the pharmacy and stock up on some insulin.
Oh, that's
things
good.
Like that.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, they allowed him to get a larger prescription when this whole thing first started. So, you know, you got to think about stuff like that because you can't rely on Uncle Sugar all the time to help you out.
Uncle Sugar.
You know, and you know, Uncle Sugar's good. They have that sweet sugar they pass out.
But yeah.
when that dries up, you're going to do exactly what they tell you to do because you need what they have.
Right.
And if you don't need it, you know, you're not going to be leveraged as hard.
I recommend getting to know, you know, local farmers that, you know, you can buy a side of beef. You know, you can go in with three or four friends and get a quarter cow. You know, that to me, I think is a great, or at least have a source where you can get meat, you know, because like what's happening right now is sporadic and geographically odd meat shortages, not everywhere, but some places are completely empty. And it has to do with just a weird kink in the supply chain that had to do with this COVID-19. And nobody really anticipated that. They bought all the toilet paper, but they didn't anticipate not being able to get ground beef. And so if you have some sort of a supply with a farmer that, you know, needs to sell his product and has the product to sell, to me, that's a great pipeline to get good, healthy food.
Yes. And I tell you, that is really caught on. Try buying a freezer right now. It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Freezers are at a premium right now. Everyone's doing that. You know, a lot of people have caught on. Let's go buy some farm-raised pork and beef. And, you know, you've got, you know, Congressman Massey, Thomas Massey, he's really pushing this new bill
the Prime Act. Yeah.
I mean, it seems like these laws and these rules with the USDA are just designed to help other countries.
Yeah.
You know, keep them. I mean, I know that the whole USDA thing, it's kind of a myth. I know my brother-in-law has a farm right next door to me. He's got 200 cattle any given day. We're pretty good here.
Right.
But he can't sell it. He can't butcher it and sell it without a USDA rep there watching him kill it.
Right.
What's crazy is you can raise your cattle, feed them whatever you want. You can feed them, you know, dog crap if you want. They'll eat it.
Right.
And, you know, all the USDA cares about is, was it clean when they were killed?
Right.
Was the area clean when you killed them? Doesn't matter what they ate or what went into them. So, you know, kind of the cool things going on now is they're, you know, these farmers are tracking what they're, you know, logging and keeping a good track of what their cows are eating, you know, because people care what they eat, what's been put into the food that they put in their bodies. So, you know, my brother-in-law's doing that, and, you know, friends around here, I just bought a hog the other day, and we had it butchered, 250-pound hog, and we got all the meat here in our freezer, and we we've been doing cattle like that, where we cut, you know, you share a cat, you know, half a beef and have it butchered. But man, I tell you what, the business to be in right now is the butchering business.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody needs one. And it's going to be like that, man. There's going to be a lot, there's going to be a surge on hunting licenses, I think, this fall too. And a premium on land to hunt on.
Yeah,
that's going to be crazy. I've got about 5 minutes here, and I want to talk about your enterprise in Simpsonville. But before we do, just give me three quick top recommendations that you would say to somebody who doesn't have a farm, doesn't have access, three things they could do. You mentioned, we'll say one, so give me two more. One was like some form of gardening, whether it was a hanging garden or even a tomato and a cucumber plant on your back deck. But what are two other things people could do?
I'd say as far as just stocking up, but don't go crazy and just, you know, try to load your truck up right away.
Yeah.
I would just say over time, you know, plan and set a little aside, you know, to build up your pantry.
Yeah.
You know, being able to prepare or be able to defend what you have is also important.
Yes.
You know, you need to have firearms and firearms training.
Yep.
You never know when, you know, when police are minutes away, seconds count, and you know, you can't always call 911.
Right.
And as the people have seen with this COVID deal, the police aren't reacting as fast as they used to because of, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. Certain things, they'll take a report, but those certain things, some of them can escalate to dangerous situations. And so, which brings me to, you actually own, now do you have two locations now of your Op Supply gun store? Is there one in Louisville as well, but also Simpsonville?
Yep. Yes, at the Louisville Armory at the 44 Kiln Court in Louisville, Kentucky, we have the retail shop open there. It's kind of like a golf pro shop, but for men.
Okay.
And women.
I saw your picture.
Patriots.
I like it. Yeah, I got it. That's awesome. So, and then you still have the store at the flea market there in?
Yes, at Simpsonville. Yep. Yeah. Shelby County Flea Market building. I own, or I lease the wing closest to the interstate. So every time you drive by Simpsonville, exit 28, you can wave at us there, or you can stop by. We haven't closed. We actually closed one day since this whole thing started, and that's because we ran out of everything that we had.
Wow!
Are
you
serious? Yes.
They bought everything?
Well, it wasn't even worth being open on that. We closed on Easter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was, you know, one, we didn't have anything to sell anyway, and two, it was Easter. So
yeah.
We just decided to take a day of rest there, and we've been open ever since. And we've somehow managed to finagle our distributors. We had really good relationships with all our distributors because we pay our bills on time.
Yeah.
And we buy a lot, and our prices are low enough to where we can, you know, just turn stuff over.
Right.
You know, some people haven't realized that, you know, the whole point is to sell.
Right.
And make a living. And the more that you sell, the more that you make, you know, it might not make, we're not buying a new car or a new house on every gun we sell.
Right.
And that's why people keep coming back.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So,
well, I know you've done some work on my AR, and I can vouch for the fact that your prices are incredibly reasonable, and the work you do is very good. So that one is, if you're just going out towards Simpsonville on Interstate 64, you know, it's basically that little flea market to the side across from the Zaxby's there, and you guys have that whole metal building that's closest to the interstate. Are you still planning on doing some training in there as well?
I do. I've got some training areas set up inside there. I've got vehicles in there that we can train out of. You know, you can do mock scenarios where you're getting carjacked or something along that line. I have a 3-bedroom home layout in there. I've got people lining up right now to start the training. I just haven't kicked off the training season yet. It's kind of, I feel like we've kind of been in war.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's shooting at us or doing anything, but it's been, you know, all hands on deck since this whole COVID thing. And I haven't done any training at all. I've got people lining up though; they're wanting firearms training. I tell you, I've never seen so many first-time gun buyers in our store.
Yeah, I love it.
And you know, they're buying shotguns and pistols and rifles, and you know, they really need the training bad. I need to get it going.
I was loving there was an article out of California where people were lining up for blocks out of sight of gun stores, but a lot of them were liberals and they just thought you could walk in and buy it, and they realized that the whole loophole is a myth. They were like, yeah. I had to do a background check. What are you talking about?
What do you mean I can't buy these on the internet?
What do you mean they're not? Can't walk out of Walmart
you can't ship
with
it
an
to
AR.
My house?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what's the social media and website for your company? It's Ops Supply. How do people get a hold of you if they want to be able to go to the internet and get a quick reminder where you're at?
The easiest way and the best thing to kind of keep up to date on everything is on our Ops Supply Facebook page.
Okay.
You know, just look up Ops, O-P-S, Supply. We're in Kentucky. Hit it up. Like it. And we post pictures of guns and stuff that's available, ammo when it comes in. You know, the ammo chain, it's slow, but it's coming. You know, 9mm and 223 5.56 rounds are, you know, they're pretty hard to get, but we're getting it. By the case, actually. We've been selling it by the case. And
awesome.
People, the word's gotten out. People come in there. We have them lined up in the mornings before we even open. People coming in to pick up equipment and gear.
That's awesome. And I want to just say this. My wife is very picky about gun stores. She loves firearms, but she doesn't like to go in stores that seem seedy or weird or make her as a woman feel uncomfortable. She loved your store. So
awesome.
For you ladies that are listening,
it's working.
Yeah, if you ladies that are listening, you walk into Ops Supply, you're going to feel totally comfortable in there and be well taken care of. So, hey, man, it's good talking to you. Thank you for your service in the SEALs, and thanks for the advice on getting people prepped up. And, you know, we're not talking about conspiracy theories here. We're just saying be, you know, a little prepared in the event that something happens and you can't get everything that you need right away. So I think it's very helpful. I appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. Enjoy that beautiful Kentucky spring on your farm, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right. We'll do.
Talk to you later. Aaron Reed, and he's a terrific guy, and that guy right there is part of the reason you're free today. He was willing to do it so that you and I can get to it. So that's pretty awesome. I love that guy. Hey, if you want to keep the ball rolling for the Disruption Zone, follow us on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. Follow us on Instagram at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone, and share this podcast. Hop on as quick as you can and subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, or iHeartRadio. Just search The Disruption Zone on the iHeartRadio app and it'll be delivered directly to your phone. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host Cameron Mills, who I promise will join us soon, and also to Dynamics Audio Productions for their help with the audio on this program. I am Leland Conway. It is The Disruption Zone.